City Bang.
You're listening to this week's podcast by the not so famous Sports Report. Your hosts, Austin Klein and Nicholas Jarvis.
Mind your manners. You hear me? And all the people should be raising their glasses. Flow crazy, celebrating the madness. I never thought I would deliver no classics. Then I hooked up with them and they delivered more classics. I've been keeping it true. Hotel good, long as I can peep on the view. Like, damn, how high are we? You gotta gamble in this life, Charles Barkley. I'm overprotected, do the dopest of methods. Now my vocal perfected, this is audio breakfast. Yes.
What's up, guys? Austin Klein, Nicholas Charbonneau, bringing you another episode of the Not So Famous Sports Reporters podcast. So, with the World Series in full swing, us baseball fans are seeing the MLB season come to a close just as fast as it started. But we're also going to try to enjoy these last few games of the World Series. And with that being said, me and Nick are going to bring you a preview and a little bit of analysis of the beginning of the series, and a preview of the rest of it. That series now sits at one game apiece, with the Game 3 to be played tonight at 8 o'clock.
It'll probably already happen by the time we post this podcast, but we'll preview that anyways. But so far the series has been interesting. We had the Giants pretty much come in to Kansas City and show the Royals who's been here before almost. It was kind of like a statement game in Game 1. They won 7-1. But then the Royals came right back and won 7-2 the next game, so it's looked pretty even so far. But tonight is Jeremy Guthrie against Tim Hudson. And I must say I like the Giants at home tonight with Tim Hudson on the mound over Jeremy Guthrie, even though Guthrie had a really good outing last time out. But, you know, weird things happen in the World Series. But so far, this World Series has reminded me kind of like the 06 and 08 World Series. I've really watched the World Series since 04, like, paid attention to it really, you know, halfway closely. And that's the World Series I can think of that it reminds me of. It reminds me of the Royals being the Cinderella team that comes in and gets high at the right time. And then the team that has been there. And like I said, experience, I always say experience is a little bit overrated, but it does help. But I think the Giants, just they're overall just a better team. And structure, even though like the structure of their team's better, even though they won about the same amount of games in the regular season. And the Giants are coming in showing them that they can play real good in the postseason. So we'll see. It'll be tough for the Royals now because they lost their game one. The Giants basically have home field advantage. But I like previewing series like this where we at least get to see a little bit of it, because when you make a prediction, you're not as blind. But my Giants and Five prediction, I must say, looks pretty good because I think they can come into AT&T Park and maybe win their first World Series in San Francisco. Like in actual AT&T Park, because the previous two World Series they won were in Detroit and they were in Texas for the other one. They never won it at home. So I like the Giants in this series still. But the Royals looked really impressive. They're changing up their lineup, I think, tonight. But the Royals' strategy is still working out pretty good. They still use Terrence Gore and Jared Dyson in situations that they aim, and that hasn't failed. So I like that strategy. Omar Infante stepped up. And Salvador Perez, even though he hasn't been getting many hits, his hits have started to become bigger and better hits. They're extra base hits. His last two hits in the World Series were extra base hits, and they accounted for quite a few, I think. Yeah, he had two RBIs on his double on Wednesday, so he's had three RBIs on his last two hits, which is huge for the Royals. They need him at the bottom of the order because he's been pretty cold. And I think I've been saying Hosmer and Moustakis are the guys who are going to break out this postseason, and those two guys really need to step up for the Royals to have a chance. But it's looking more in the Giants' favor for me. But if the Royals can win tonight, Game 4, they have Ryan Vogelsong against. They have Vargas going up against Ryan Vogelsong, so that's when the series would start to shift back in their favor if they won tonight or tomorrow. The Giants really have to put them away tonight, and I think if the Giants win tonight and then they win again tomorrow, the series is theirs for sure. And if they lose both those games, the Royals are probably going to win the series. But if they split them, I still like the Giants. But we'll have to see. It's an interesting series so far. It's actually, you know, I say the Giants look like they're a more dominant team, but so far it's been really evenly matched, like I said. So We'll have to see. I was really impressed by the Giants game one victory and how they jumped up in front in game two. Gregor Blanco hit a leadoff home run. The Giants just need to hold on to that lead. And they need to stop using Hunter Strickland. And it's just 5 home runs in a postseason. That's horrible. The guy, he can throw fast, but that doesn't get you anywhere. You need to know how to pitch, too. You know, you got guys like Bruce Chen who stick in the majors for 15, or not quite 15 years, but around that, who can barely hit 90 every once in a while because they know how to pitch. And Strickland obviously doesn't know how to do that. And it sucks that Lincecum got hurt for the Giants now because he's a guy who would step in for Strickland. So I have to see what happens with Lincecum. That's another huge thing that's developing. But I think Fauci's smart enough to stay away from Strickland. So I'm just going to stick with my gut and predict and say the Giants in 5 because I said this reminded me of the 06 and 08 World Series. And in that World Series, the AL had home field advantage in both of it, and the Rays and Tigers won game 2, only to get swept when they went on the road to the NLC. So I'm going to stick with the Giants in 5, but Kansas City looks like they have a shot, and Kansas City might just be able to run the fairy tale right to a World Series title. But one more thing I want to bring up before I get to you, because I know I'm taking up a lot of time here, but I think this World Series is interesting in the fact that it's the first non-strike season with 2 teams in the World Series that have less than 90 wins, and I thought that was something that was really interesting in one of the interesting storylines coming into the series. And I think it's kind of, you know, good for Bud Selig because he got that wild card, 2 teams from the wild card to get in to the World Series. So it makes him look good. But I also think that, does that mean the MLB playoffs are more of a crapshoot and not necessarily the best team wins? I think from time to time that's true, but when there's a truly dominant team, that the dominant team usually comes out on top. But this is one of those years where it just really, if you get hot in the postseason, you get hot in the and the clubs are all so close together that I don't think that maybe necessarily the absolute best team, most talented team will win. But whoever wins the World Series is definitely deserving of it. So that's my take on that. And you can hit on that a little bit too. Because obviously if you win the World Series, you deserve it. But you might not necessarily be the best team from that year. You just kind of got hot at the right time sometimes is what some people would argue. So over to you.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I like that point that you brought up, you know. Bud Selig did a nice job by expanding the playoffs to 2 wildcard teams, of course. And both of these teams are definitely deserving this year. I don't think that the MLB playoffs are a crapshoot. Simply because, you know, some of the teams with the best records that just the average baseball fan would have thought would be in the World Series. You know, the Angels had a really easy September. So that they got to pad their record a little bit. One of the favorites to win the World Series are Detroit Tigers. You know, I've said from the beginning of the season that they're just too streaky for me. You know, I was afraid of this, them having one of their cold streaks at the wrong time, and that's, I mean, it wasn't necessarily a cold streak, but the bullpen just couldn't get it done. But about the World Series, I hadn't tweeted this out or anything, but I predicted the Royals to win in 7. Obviously, that's still intact. I just think if the Royals can get their bats going and outscore San Francisco in the first 5 or 6 innings, they're going to get it done because their bullpen has just been so dominant. They tossed 3 in, I think it was like almost 4 innings of 1 or 2 hit baseball in game 2.
Almost 4. 3 2/3. And they only... The only blemish was that Greg Holland gave up 1 hit, and Calvin Herrera, who can sometimes rear his wild head, but he didn't really, he wasn't very wild in the regular season, but he walked 2 guys, so, but I don't think their bullpen is gonna hurt him, so yeah.
Yeah, if there's anything I've learned from watching baseball, especially the last 2 years in Detroit, is the bullpen is a major part of a winning team. There's no getting around that. Unless every single one of your starters is going to go out there and throw 9 innings, you need a dominant bullpen.
Which in today's game is pretty, it's pretty unrealistic. Yeah, and then let me add on to that. I just kind of looked at what was going to happen in San Francisco. But if the series does go back to Kansas City, which is very probable because it's hard for any team to win 3 straight games, even though I said that, you know, it reminds me of the 06 and 08 World Series, the Royals have Ventura, who didn't walk a guy. He wasn't the power pitcher that everybody expected. He gave up a home run, and he only struck out two, but he didn't walk anybody, which I think is huge. And then they have probably, it looks like, Jeremy Guthrie going Game 7, which Guthrie is a pretty good veteran presence, and honestly, if James Shields can't go Game 7, I would want Jeremy Guthrie going Game 7, and I would like the Royals probably, if it did go back to Kansas City, I think they would be the favorite team. But, in a five-game span, I always say a one-game span, anything can happen, because, you know, you got all the stats and stuff, and a lot of them are really accurate. Like, you can look at a pitcher's FIP and so on, and their whip is pretty telling. I think there's a lot of different stats that you can look at. But I think in a one-game situation, anything can happen. Ramon Santiago can walk up and slam. He doesn't have much power, but he did that for the Reds. You know, because there's so many possible outcomes that for each guy that could happen, that in one game, anything can really happen. So it's hard to predict stuff like that. But I definitely like a veteran guy like Jeremy Guthrie going in Game 7. And I also, in saying that, people were saying, how did Big Game James Shields get his nickname? You know, because he had a pretty bad World Series game in the first game. I think that's pretty unfair to judge him off of one game. He only made it three innings, and I guess you could consider it a really bad game. But I think James Shields' next outing could be a lot better because he's had so many bad outings in a row. He's almost due for a good outing by looking at his stats and looking at that kind of law that I keep, where, you know, anything can happen in one game, but eventually James Shields is going to run into a good game because he's a good pitcher. So that's just the way I look at it when you look at stats and the eye test and everything. So I think James Shields, next time going out, he's going to be the turn, and I think he's going to pitch a pretty good game.
All right, so there you have our preview of the rest of the World Series. The preview and review of
like
the first two games.
Way, get a chance to see what's going on.
Yeah.
So we're going to move on.
So there you have it. We're going to move on to some NFL stuff. This week we're going to give you our picks for the remaining NFL games. Of course, Thursday Night Football already happened.
We would have picked the Broncos, right?
Yeah, I have to say I would have picked the Broncos.
I don't know who I would have picked. Probably the Broncos.
The Broncos defeated the Chargers last night.
Peyton Manning was pretty mad about his PA guy. Did you hear about that? Peyton Manning yelled at the guy who runs the soundboard at Denver. He was causing the crowd to get riled up during the Broncos were on offense, and Peyton was pretty mad at that. I thought that was pretty interesting. He's a competitor, though. It goes straight in, man. But we're going to move on to the NFL now.
All right, so as we mentioned at the end of the last segment, in this newer segment, we're going to be discussing this week's NFL matchups and giving you our predictions. So to start off, we already talked about Thursday Night Football. Broncos defeated the Chargers by a score of 35-21. Peyton Manning threw three touchdowns to Emmanuel Sanders, so big game for Emmanuel. Phillip Rivers had a few. But the first game on Sunday morning is the Lions versus Falcons game. They'll be playing in London this week, so I guess that's pretty exciting for the NFL. Not exciting for me because I don't want to wake up at 9:30 in the morning on a Sunday.
It's not exciting for anybody in America that's an NFL fan, really.
But either way, Lions football, it's what I look forward to every week. So.
Well, the Lions have a lot of injuries going into this one. Ebron and is it Pettigrew? I think almost every tight end's hurt right now. But Ebron and Pettigrew, I think, are both doubtful, and I don't think Bush is going to play it. Most likely, and Calvin's a game-time decision. So it almost makes a easy pick because it's like a neutral field, and the Lions have the opposite record of the Falcons at 5-2. It turns an easier pick into a kind of hard pick. But I'm going to go with the Lions because Stafford has gone without Calvin Johnson two straight weeks now, and they're 2-0 in those weeks. So I like the Lions still. I think Bell will pick up some yards on the ground, and everything's worked out so far. Golden Tate has to be Golden Tate, and I like the Lions in this one still.
It'll be close. So.
Yeah, I agree with that. That pick. Lions are my team. Stick by them. Lions are going to defeat the Falcons this week. Even with the injuries of Kelvin Johnson, who, I mean, game time decision, but I think we all know the truth behind that. Kelvin Johnson will not be playing until after the bye week. Matt Stafford survived two straight weeks without him.
Makes sense not to play him, or to not announce it, though, just to keep it a mystery.
Yeah, but he, as Lions fans, we know he needs the rest, and that's just the smart thing to do. Jim Caldwell is not going to put somebody out there who's in danger of re-injuring or further injuring themselves.
Yeah.
Joique Bell with Reggie Bush was quoted to say, "I want to do my best to be out there Sunday." But I mean, same thing with him. All right, the Lions are definitely not a second half team, and if they're gonna want to go anywhere in the playoffs and prove something to the league, they're going to have to win some games in the second half. That's all there is to it, and the healthier we are, the easier that will be. So Golden Tate should step up, try to fill that role of Kelvin Johnson, with Kelvin being out, of course, and the Lions are going to defeat the Falcons this week. The next game is the Buffalo Bills versus the Jets.
That's a tough one. I'm going to go with the... How about you go first? I need a little time to think about it.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with the Bills. The Bills, although they're not the number two ranked defense anymore, I'd still put them in the top five. That defense has just been relentless this year, almost as good as the Lions. And with the Jets quarterback troubles, I just don't see them putting up many points against the Bills.
I think the Jets are going to win this one. I just have a feeling with the Bills rushers out, that the Jets will use it to their advantage, and I think that Geno will have a halfway decent week, and Rex Ryan really needs this win, and I think he's going to be able to coach his guys to victory. And Percy Harvin's debut as a Jet might be a memorable one, but I'm going to take the Jets here at home.
You were, of course, referring to the running backs there. And
yeah, they're all hurt. Spiller and Jackson both got hurt, and now they got their third and fourth.
Okay, we have the Ravens and the Bengals as the third game of the week.
Ravens and Bengals. I'm going to take the Bengals. The Bengals looked really good at the beginning part of the year, and then now they're 3-2-1 because they tied the game at the Panthers. And the Ravens are 5-2. But I like the Bengals at home. The Bengals usually play really well at home, and I think they're going to get back into their winning ways this week. Maybe a big week from Giovanni Bernard.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Bengals also. You know, the Bengals' defense looked amazing coming into the season. I had them on my fantasy team. Unfortunately, they took a little downfall the last 2 weeks. I haven't started them. You know, with A.J. Green back on the field this week, Andy Dalton's got another weapon along with Mohamed Sanu. Giovanni Bernard's had a couple down weeks. Hopefully he can have a bounce back week this week. I like the Bengals to beat the Ravens.
All right.
Next is the Bears and the Patriots.
The Bears and the Patriots. Well, that'll be a good one because the Bears have struggled, and the Patriots started off the year struggling, but of late they've been pretty hot. Now they're 5-2. So it's in New England, and I'm going to say this is probably going to be the closest game of the week. I'm going to go out on a limb and say this one will be one that's decided last minute. But I'm going to take the Patriots. I think they're going to pull it off and move to 6-2. I think Tom Brady has at least one more postseason run left in him, and he's going to want to get as high a seeding as possible, and he wants to run away with this division. So I think the Patriots are going to take advantage of a struggling and Bears team that's almost coming apart, because I don't know if you heard, but last week there was a lot of yelling and stuff after the game in the locker room with the Bears. So I think the Bears will play a decent game next Sunday, but I just think the Patriots will come out ahead.
Yeah, I did see that. I read an article. I guess Brandon Marshall's got some, he's got some chemistry problems with Cutler. He actually called him out after the game. Put the whole game last week on Cutler. But yeah, I'm going to take the Patriots. Tom Brady, it's hard to argue with him. Gronkowski's looking healthy. He got healthier last week, you know. Caught a touchdown pass. He's just looking like Rob Gronkowski, of course. The Bears' defense is struggling. Their offense is struggling. And like Nick said, their team is just not meshing, kind of falling apart is the term you used. So I'm going to take the Patriots. The Seahawks and the Panthers.
That's another good one. I expect the Seahawks to bounce back after a really surprising 3-3 start. I like Russell Wilson having a good week this week, and I think Marshawn Lynch is going to have a big week too. And right now, the Panthers' rushing leader is Cam Newton, along with him being, of course, their quarterback. So I think the Seattle defense is going to take advantage of Carolina this game, and I think they're going to force Carolina to a game under 500. That's pretty amazing that the loser of this game will be under 500 to me, because the Panthers are 3-3-1 and the Seahawks are 3-3, and both were really good. I think they were the 1-2 seed last year, I'm pretty sure. So that's pretty amazing to me.
Yeah, definitely didn't expect these two teams to start off the way they did. I mean, the Seahawks, yeah, the whole Legion of Boom thing. The Madden curse hasn't got them yet. Hopefully it doesn't. I like the Seahawks as a team. I like Russell Wilson. Marshawn Lynch is just a beast. I have their defense bouncing back a little bit this week. It's been a little bit weak in the first six games. And the Panthers, you know, they're having some running back trouble. They don't actually have a number one. So Seahawks over the Panthers in that one. We got some more here.
Four.
The Texans and the Titans.
Well, that one, I'm going to have to go with the Texans. The Texans have actually kind of unexpected to do this fall. And I think Arian Foster's been a huge part of that. He was a great pickup for me in fantasy football in the third round. He's been more like a first rounder almost. So I like the Texans going into Tennessee and winning that divisional game. I think the Texans can stick in the hunt with the Colts for a while. I think the Colts are going to obviously probably win the division, but I think they can stay at least close to them for a little longer. I think the Texans are a little bit underrated this year. So I'm going to go with the Texans in that game.
Yeah, the Texans have a great defense, especially their front line. And the Titans have had some struggles, just offensive struggles, which were expected. They don't have many weapons.
They're starting Mettenberger this week, too. That's not a good sign.
Yeah, Jay Clocker's been hurt, and Mettenberger gets the start, so Texans over Titans in that one. Dolphins versus Jaguars. I don't think this is a very hard choice. The Jaguars did get their first win last week, but the Dolphins are the powerhouse, but I really like what they have going with, although Marino's injured, I really like Lamar Miller.
Yeah.
On offense.
He killed the Jaguars' top rush for Denard Robinson, who got over half of his yards so far this year in a game against the Browns. He's only rushed for 221 yards this year, and he got 120-something last week against the Browns. So I think the Jaguars are going to get shut down in this game in the battle for the battle of Florida. So I like the Dolphins to run away with this one, even though it's in Jacksonville.
Yes. Okay, the Rams and the Chiefs.
Well, the Chiefs had that really impressive Monday Night Football game, and since then, they're 3-3 right now. They're pretty mediocre after having that great start last year. And the Rams aren't very good this year. But last week, Davis pulled off the amazing win against the Seahawks. And I just like the Chiefs in this one solely because I like the fact that they have the home field advantage here. I think the home team would have won this game. So I'm going to take the Chiefs based on the fact that they're at home.
Yeah, that was my point. You beat me to it. The Chiefs have to win this game. Alex Smith knows it. Jamal Charles is, he was hurt the first couple weeks. I expected a big game out of him this week. Chiefs playing at home. Chiefs win. The Eagles and the Cardinals.
That one should be a good game. They're both 5-1. And I'm going to go out and say the Cardinals win this game. They've got the home field advantage, but I think the Cardinals are really underrated, and I think they're better than the 49ers this year. And I think a lot of people are sleeping on the Cardinals, kind of. But I think they're gonna be almost like the Carolina Panthers, the team that really broke out. Their quarterback's old in Carson Palmer, and he hasn't started every game and everything. But I like just their whole team chemistry, and I like the Cardinals squeezing this victory out over Philadelphia. But I think Philadelphia is going to have a good year. But this is a marquee matchup because these are two of the top teams in the NFC.
Yeah, I do think I think the Cardinals are going to have a good rushing attack this week. Andre Ellington should see the majority of the carries, and I think they're planning on kind of ramming it down the Eagles' throat this week, trying to run the ball the majority of the time. But I'm going to go ahead and take the Eagles on this one. I'm expecting a big week from their young tight end, Zach Ertz. You know, Foles had a bad stretch there, but I think he's going to be all right and kind of have a bounce back week this week. Maybe a touchdown or two to Zach Ertz and Jeremy Maclin. You know, he's been one of the top wide receivers in the league this year, so it's hard to argue with that.
Okay, what about the Bucks and the Vikings? Who do you think in that game? I think I'm gonna go with the Bucks. I think they're gonna get their second win of the year. I like Teddy Bridgewater, but I just like the Bucks in this game. It's kind of like a toilet bowl game compared to the one we just picked. But I like Vincent Jackson to have a big game and maybe Glennon to have a big game. And I'm gonna go with the Bucks here at home. They're the favorite too.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Vikings in this one. I really like the emergence of Teddy Bridgewater in the quarterback role there. He doesn't have much to work with the loss of Adrian Peterson, of course, but Asieta and Jerick McKinnon are both going to try to step in and fill that role as best they can, and I see the Minnesota Vikings taking this one in Tampa.
So we got four more games by my count. So the next one is the Raiders and the Browns. And I expect the Browns to come back and win this game. A lot of people are going, oh my goodness, the Browns are 3-2. They might be able to start off 6-2 because they have such an easy schedule. And the Jacksonville Jaguars beat them. But the Browns are at home this week. And I think if I had to pick a team that was going to not win a game this year, I would say the Raiders are the most likely to do it. I think they'll be the last team to win a game. And I like the Browns in this game at 500.
Yeah, a lot of people did see the Browns starting 6-2 and thought they might be, I mean,
they got a little bit over.
I dare to say contender for the playoffs, which I never thought. But a lot of people were saying, you know, if they can start off 6-2, they might squeeze into the wild card game. But I disagree with that. Although I do think the Browns are going to win this week. Their defense had a little bit of a rough outing last week against the Jaguars. They lost that game. I see Brian Hoyer coming back into form,
yeah.
Maybe getting their tight end Jordan Cameron involved a little bit this week. He didn't get many receptions last week, so I see that as a big game for the Browns to win over the Raiders.
All right, and that takes us to our last 4 o'clock game, which is Matt, it's on the West Coast, more because it's a primetime game, and that's the Steelers and the Colts, and it's at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. And that's going to be the premier AFC matchup of the week. And I'm going to go ahead and take the Pittsburgh Steelers in this. A lot of attention went to DeMarco Murray, but Le'Veon Bell is really, really underrated in a sense because he's had a really good year too. And I like the Steelers pulling this off at home. I think the Colts are a talented team, and they've rebounded well after their shaky start, but I think they're going to end up losing this game. And I think that I like the Steelers at home, and I think they're both going to be 5-3 at the midway point. So
yeah. I think
Pittsburgh's going to get one of the wild cards this year.
I'm going to take the Pittsburgh Steelers as well. The combination of course, the veteran Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Brown might be one of the best quarterback running back, number one wide receiver in the league. Le'Veon Bell is just a beast. He's young. He's going to be a running back to watch in the future of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
It's almost like the passing of the torch this year because Charles and Peterson were considered some of the best by many, and they're both Peterson's obviously not playing, but
yeah.
Charles has had some trouble, so it's almost like Bell and Murray are becoming the premier running backs of the league.
Yeah, I really do like the Colts. I'm a fan of T.Y. Hilton, but I'm going to pick the Pittsburgh Steelers to pull this one out at home.
All right, so that leaves us with our two night games. On Sunday Night Football, we have the 2-4 Saints against the 5-2 Packers. And I think the Packers are going to destroy the Saints, even in the Superdome. The Saints couldn't hold on to a lead last week against the Lions. It's a lead they probably should have held on to. And Drew Brees just doesn't look like normal Drew Brees to me. And I think that the Saints are probably on their way to a solid 6-10 season, the way that it looked to me. So I'm going to take the Packers in that. I think the Packers are just a lot more talented, a lot better. And as long as they play their game, they should come out with a two-possession victory in that game at least.
Yeah, the Saints blew a pretty big lead against the Lions last week in the final minutes of the game.
And the Lions didn't even play that well.
Yeah, and honestly, the Saints defense, if you take away the last 6 minutes of that game, the Saints defense completely overplayed their potential. Sean Payton said it, that this is the best that his team has played all season. And that's, you know, and they lost. So I'm going to pick the Packers. Aaron Rodgers is looking like the best quarterback in the NFL this year through the first seven games, with his combination of Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and Eddie Lacy.
And Adams is starting to get in the party a little bit. I got him on my fantasy team, and he's getting a few more points every week. So he's got another up-and-coming wide receiver.
The Packers defense isn't, you know, it's a little bit above average in the league. I just got, you know, they're playing the Saints. Come on. That's a pretty easy pick for me.
Yep, and then that leaves us with our Monday Night Football game, which it doesn't look too intriguing to watch. It doesn't look like it's going to be too fun because the 6-1 Cowboys are going to play the 2-5 Redskins, who look like a mess to me. Kirk Cousins has not played very well for them after Griffin went down, and since Griffin went down, their season kind of went down. So I'm going to take the Cowboys in this as much as it pains me. But, I mean, you're talking about quarterback, running back, wide receiver combos. How about Romo, Murray, and Dez Bryant? I mean, that's pretty good. And I don't think the Cowboys are going to make a deep run in the playoffs this year. I just don't think they will. I don't see them as a Super Bowl contender, but I think they're going to have a really good regular season.
Yeah, you know, the Cowboys aren't my favorite team to pick. So-called America's team, I have a little bit of a hatred for. But there's no denying that DeMarco Murray is having a magical season. 100 yards in each of his first seven games.
And I don't think that's going to stop this week.
Yeah, I don't think it's... The Washington Redskins defense is so weak. Just a little side note. Nick and I played a Madden game, and he was the Redskins, and he was like, man, I see why they don't win games, you know?
Yeah, their offensive line was really bad, too. I felt bad for Robert Griffin for a few minutes.
Yeah. If you don't know, RG3 is my favorite player in the league. Baylor Bear... You know, big fan of RG3, but he's not healthy, and they've actually announced that Colt McCoy is starting this week, so...
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's not the best.
There's no way he's going to do better than Cousins, in my opinion. But, because McCoy started for a few games for Cleveland and didn't do really well, I just don't... Colt McCoy is a good college quarterback, but I don't think the dude's an NFL material quarterback. Cousins is struggling, but I think Cousins could have a decent NFL career. He might never be like elite, but I think he could have a pretty good career if he gets it together. Okay, but before we end the segment, so that covers all of the games for this week. But as of right now, who do you think the Super Bowl favorite is? Because Seattle was the overwhelming favorite to repeat, and they're 3-3. So do you think Denver is the favorite, or you got somebody else right now?
As of right now, I would say Denver. But the Packers are a really strong contender. I'd love to say my Lions, but the Lions just aren't there yet. I think they're going to make the playoffs this year. Maybe as a wild card. I'd hope they'd win the NFC North, but the Packers just look too good behind Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, and at the beginning of the year, I said Packers and Lions, and the Packers looked really bad the first couple weeks. And I said, well, probably the Bears and Lions now. But I said I was probably going to regret that. I said it on the podcast. I said it to Austin a bunch of times. And I knew I shouldn't have rescinded on that. Because, of course, it's the Packers and Lions. So it looks like I'm a flip-flopper, but I'm going to take that statement back. Because the Bears are talented. They're just not putting it together. And the Packers are putting it together. They look pretty impressive to me. But, yeah, I would have to say the Broncos are the favorite at this point. I think Peyton's going to win one more Super Bowl. But there's a lot of interesting teams out there. that could make a run. I think this might be one of the years that maybe a top seeded team doesn't win the Super Bowl. Maybe a lower seeded team makes a run. I think it, like, it's starting to shape up like one of those years, but we'll see. So we're going to move back to baseball with a couple off-season notes for the next segment. Joe Maddon left the Rays today, opted out of the deal, and shocked the baseball world during the World Series. So.
The Maddon's decision may have been because Andrew Friedman, the Rays general manager, recently decided to make the move to L.A. With the Dodgers, and he's their GM now. And Maddon initially said that after Friedman left, that he was going to stick with Tampa because one of the guys who led Tampa is still in charge, Silverman, and I think that's who it is. He wasn't going to opt out of his deal because he had an option. But today, he shocked the baseball world, like I said, and opted out of that deal. And Joe Maddon, a lot of people say he's overrated, blah, blah, blah. I think the dude's a genius, and I think not only is he smart with baseball, but he's a really good manager of just people in general. I think he could be a good, like a counselor or something. He just seems like he can manage people really good and get the best out of them along with his baseball knowledge and skills. So a lot of teams could benefit by having Maddon manage their team next year. And he's basically going to explore the free agent market. And, of course, we're based in Michigan, so we, of course, are Tigers fans, and I think we would both agree that Maddon would be head and shoulders above Ausmus as a manager, and even though it looks like Maddon may be headed to L.A., Maddon may get one more year, and it's even been suggested that Maddon sit out a year to be ethically correct, but I think that's pretty silly as a baseball manager. If somebody's doing better at your job than you, and you're under contract, sometimes people get fired because of that and whatnot. So, I mean, it's not like if a guy under contract gets fired, he's not going to get his money. So I don't think Maddon really has any ethical obligation that he's going to worry about, like I've seen a few Raiders suggest. But I think he's going to test the free agent market, and it's certainly intriguing with a manager. He's kind of, Maddon's almost a combination of the new age and the old age thinking of baseball. He does some stuff by the book, but he also incorporates new age thinking, and I really like that about him because I don't think one way is completely right. I think numbers can tell you a lot, and I like the new age way of thinking a lot, but I think there is some stuff in the older age of baseball, as they call it, that can help you, and I think Maddon is a combination of that. And I always rank Maddon as my number one manager in baseball since he took the race to the World Series. Actually, I'm going to share this with you. I read a stat on ESPN, and before the Rays had Maddon as their manager, they had a win percentage of 4.01. And since he became their manager, they've had a win percentage of 5.17. He's guided them to 5.91 seasons since he was hired in 2006, I believe. And he's made 4 playoff appearances, including he won a pennant. And before the Rays had, they didn't have bad managers. Luke Pinella was a manager there, and Luke Pinella is a pretty good manager by most people's standards. And, you know, he was one of those managers that only could help them do a 4.01 win percentage in their first close to 10 years of existence. So I think Maddon, I think what Maddon's going to look for in his next job, if I had to guess, is an opportunity where maybe he can have a bit more of a challenge and more pressure. I think if he's a guy like me, he's going to want to take on a challenge because he knows that he can do well with a low payroll. Maybe he's going to want the pressure of being able to manage a higher payroll team to victory because there's probably a little more pressure because, well, there definitely is because, say, the Twins, when the Twins lose, people kind of expect it because they're a small market team. But when the A's win, they get praised because their money ball method and the Rays the same. So I think Maddon might want to try that experience. So the Dodgers were a destination that a lot of people were saying, and then the Twins. There's a lot of different places you could go. I've heard the Cubs, and then a lot of Tiger fans have been saying Tigers. I haven't heard any experts predict the Tigers, but I think that they could benefit, and I think they should at least look into it. That's how they got Sparky Anderson. Les Kane was their manager, and he was guiding him to a pretty good year. Wasn't anything amazing, but he had a winning record. He got fired, and they hired Sparky, and the rest is history. I just think sometimes an opportunity is so good that you can't pass it up, and it really isn't a bad choice because it's just so obvious that it's a good move. So I know you have a little bit of an opinion. You don't think he's coming to Detroit, I think, from what you talked to me about. I don't know if you changed your mind because that was after we talked after the initial report of Manning being let go, but didn't you think that he was going to go to L.A.?
Yeah, I definitely don't think there's a chance he comes to the Tigers. mostly because at the end of the season press conference, they've already kind of discussed and, I mean, almost gave the job to Osmus. And, I mean, if an opportunity like this comes up, you know, there's always room to, you know, get Osmus out of the way. And, you know, he might be able to stay with the team. But, I mean, yeah, I'd love to have, bottom line is I'd love to have Joe Mendez as the manager, but I just don't see it happening.
Well, Dombrowski moves quick and does this type of stuff sometimes, but I can definitely see your point. Because it's not like he always does it. He's been everything.
Now, when I heard the news, it started as just a rumor, and then I saw it announced officially. And, my honest immediate thought was the Twins. And then I got on Twitter, and I saw the Dodgers were a supposed front runner. And then Ken Rosenthal debunked that.
So now,
source says no Dodgers. So, you know, so it's going to be interesting, you know.
To watch, yeah.
I really didn't think that he would have decided to leave the race.
It's interesting because there's usually not, like, it doesn't happen like this where a manager will hit, like, the free agent market. Like, I remember, most recent thing I can remember is Ozzie Guillen went to the Marlins, and the Marlins had to give the White Sox compensation because Guillen was still under contract. But I've never really, can't remember a time where a manager this good was basically a free agent, basically, you know.
Where there's almost like almost a bidding
for a manager. But he's worth it. And he'd be a big upgrade over Osmus, period. So I think we covered that. And there's a few quick things I wanted to hit on baseball news-wise. One thing I just saw was Cole Hamels might be traded this offseason, but I don't think he will because Ruben Amaro asked for a lot. He almost asked for too much for his guys. And I read that the Phillies kind of want to start to rebuild. I'll believe that when I see it because Ruben Amaro is really loyal to his guys, almost too loyal. And I don't think he's going to, I don't know, he's never traded his guys. Like, Altley has been rumored to go for 2 or 3 years now, and he's never traded Altley, so I don't know. I think they're going to be asking for way too much for Hamels, but we'll see what happens. That'll be an interesting situation monitor. And then, also that came out today is Victor Martinez wants a 4-year deal, and if you're the Tigers, hey, give it to him because he's really important to you, and if he leaves you, you're in a little bit of trouble, I think, almost. But if they don't, Miggy can DH and split the time with Castellanos at DH, I think. But we'll cross that bridge if we get to it on the show, because that will be a big part of the show, because I'll be pretty sad if Victor leaves Detroit. But I think the Tigers can give him 4 years, and I think the Tigers are the front runner at this point. And then one more thing I wanted to hit on was Yoenis Cespedes is on the Red Sox for 1 more year. He's a free agent after this next year. He's got 1 more year on his contract. And the Red Sox have just a ton of outfielders, and it's rumored they may move him or Jackie Bradley Jr. And the Tigers should be on both of those guys. But, you know, Bradley's the best defensive center fielder in the AL pretty much right now, maybe outside of Lorenzo Cain this year. But Bradley has a good future in center field, and that'll help with the loss of Jackson. He probably won't be as great of a hitter, but he might develop into a decent hitter. And then I like Cespedes. I really do if he comes to the Tigers for a year. I had this crazy idea because if Madden goes to the Rays, they might want Price. They might want to bring Price. So if they gave us their top three prospects, we could flip Corey Seager because we don't really need Corey Seager because Devine Travis could move back to second with Jock Peterson because their top three prospects are Urias, their Mexican pitcher, Peterson, and Seager. And then we could just flip Seager
for Giannis and then maybe go out and sign one of the top starting pitchers, like re-sign Scherzer. That's just a crazy idea, but you never know with David Dombrowski. And I could see us or the Tigers getting Giannis, even if they don't do that crazy scenario that I thought up in my head that almost kind of made sense. But I would prefer to keep David Price unless he refuses to sign an extension. But even at that point, you give him a qualifying offer and you get a draft pick. But bottom line is, I like Giannis Cespedes, but I wouldn't mind him being a Tiger. Those were the few things I wanted to hit on real quick, and then I think we're going to move to our last pop culture segment for this show in a minute.
Yeah, just want to touch on that. As I've told Nick in the past, I'm really not I'm not sold on the fact that Giannis Cespedes would be a great fit in Detroit. You know, I'm just not, for one, I'm not with the idea of trading Price whatsoever. I believe we can get him to sign an extension, and I think he'd be good in the long run to have a dominant lefty on the mound.
I agree with that, too. I'm not saying I'm just, because I would prefer to keep Price, too, if we can. So I'm going to clear that up, because I really do like Price. I'm just saying if we come to the point where some weird situation comes along or he doesn't want to re-sign with us, and we think trading is the best option. So.
Alright guys, so Nick was mistaken. For our final segment of today's podcast, we're actually going to be bringing back the old game from week 2 called Fact or Fiction.
My bad guys, I apologize. We said that's the fact or the pop culture this week.
So for those of you who haven't listened to us play Fact or Fiction before, what's going to happen is I have 5 statements relating around the sports world that each of us will get 45 seconds to give our thoughts on and say whether we think they are fact or fiction. Alright, so Nick's going to start this one off, and the first statement is DeMarco Murray will break the single season rushing record, and go.
I'm going to say no. I just think that's a tough record. A lot of people have come close and they have broken it. And I think the 100-yard streak's going to end eventually. And he's young, so I think he might go through a little bit of a slump. So I'm going to say no. You have to answer it too, right? Are you going to give an answer?
Yeah, you get 45 seconds.
Huh?
You get 45 seconds.
45 seconds.
Keep going.
Well, those are the best reasons I could think of for Murray. But, I mean, they're in a tougher division too. And I don't know, I just see him slowing down the second half. I just really, that's honestly what I see happening. And, you know, you get tired and fatigued as the year goes on, too. So I think that Murray's not going to get close to 1,000, or not 1,000, but close to breaking the record. He's obviously going to break 1,000 yards.
All right, time's
up. I don't think he gets 2,000.
Right. Time's up, but you lose that. You lose that round just because you wanted to stop at 15 seconds.
I wasn't sure how you were doing this. You hadn't done this in a while. I was going to ask if you went in. Or if we split the time, but now I got the gist of it, so let's get rolling.
All right, so my time will start. All right, so basically I'm going to say no also. DeMarco Murray's had a great season, and he's definitely one heck of a player, especially with the scheme the Cowboys are using this year. You know, run-first offense, getting even Dez Bryant involved in the blocking game, you know, to help out the run game. Make huge holes. DeMarco Murray actually bought his offensive line IMAX. You know, he's even grateful for that. So, I got 10 seconds left. Basically, I'm going to say no. Last time I checked, I think he had 900 yards. We're at the halfway point this week. And the record's something like 2,200. So, I definitely do not think he's going to break it this year. All right, moving on to question 2. Nick, you're going to have 45 seconds for this one also. Adrian Peterson will play football this season.
Well, that's a tough one. That's more of a legal case thing, but I'm going to say no because I think even if the case gets solved by the end of the year, that the Vikings will probably, they're not going to be able to trade him, and I think they're just going to at least sit him out or release him before the year is over or for the rest of the year because they don't want him playing. There was rumors that they might try to trade him when the allegations came up. And then I think they made it pretty clear that they're going to move forward without him. So I think that's after the trading deadline. They'll either let him sit for the rest of the year and collect his paycheck, or just get rid of him and release him if the legal system finds him guilty. That one's a tough one because it's unpredictable, because we don't know how long the case will take and what the outcome of it will be, and I think a lot hinges on that.
Time up. Okay.
But no is my answer.
Okay, so I also am going to say no on this one. His hearing was set for sometime in November, but, you know, that's just the initial. They started a little bit of something. He pleaded not guilty to his child abuse charges. So, you know, other than that, I believe if he does get not found guilty for child abuse, he's going to get suspended from the NFL. You know, the NFL, with the whole Ray Rice thing, they're just going to really start cracking down on this stuff. I know even at some of the high school football games tonight, they were wearing purple to stand up to domestic violence in football. So that's definitely, you know, it came out worldwide. So no, Adrian Peterson will not play football this season. Question number 3. Ready?
Yep.
The Cleveland Browns will make the playoffs.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say no, because there's a lot of talented teams in the AFC this year. And even though the Browns have somewhat of an easy schedule, I think they really blew it when they lost to Jacksonville. And they might start off 5-3, but I don't think they'll win more than 9 games. So I'm going to say no on that one. I think the Steelers and Ravens in their own division are both better. I don't even think they're the best team in their division. And with the Bengals being, you know, starting up hot, and there's a lot of teams that are good in the AFC, so I just don't see them coming out in a playoff spot. Somewhere in the middle, I think, is where they come out. I think they're the worst team in their division still, so, I mean, if that tells you all you need to know, I mean, that means they're definitely not going to get in the playoffs, because there's only 2 wild cards. So, the Steelers, we talked about, they're usually really good, and the Ravens have always in recent history on better than Browns. So.
All right, time up. So, yeah, I'm going to have to say no on this one, too. The Browns have some talent with the emergence of tight end Jordan Cameron, Ben Tate, and, you know, the newfound talent in Brian Hoyer, excuse me. you know, a lot of people, including Nick, thought we'd see Johnny Manziel a little bit by now, but you know, Hoyer's keeping him on the sidelines. There's even been talks of extending Hoyer's contract already. So, with that being said, they do have a lot of talent, but they're not to the point yet.
Yeah, there's probably, I'm going to say San Diego and Pittsburgh are the wild cards there, though.
All right. So, number 4. Jameis Winston will enter the NFL draft.
Oh, well, I don't know, because he's kind of a silly guy. Kind of makes some dumb choices. But I'm going to go out and say, yes, I think he's got to do it at this point, because he's probably going to have to sit out a lot of games next year, if not. I hate the NCAA. I could go on for more than 45. I could go on 45 times 45 seconds about this. But I don't think that the NCAA should penalize guys for signing autographs for money. It's their own name. It's not like they're asking the NCAA for money that they got at NCAA events. It's going off doing their own thing and getting money for their name that they helped establish and build. So about the autograph thing, I don't think Winston should be penalized, but I could be smart. He knows the NCAA and him don't go together, and he'll enter the NFL draft and sign a pro contract and be a millionaire, and that's that. I mean, that would be the smart thing to do.
Time up. So,
yeah, I'm going to say yeah, though. I'm going to say he does make that decision, and he makes the right decision.
Okay, I've always said no to this question, but I've heard some good points in the last few weeks. yeah, with the NCAA, the way it is, he probably, I can see him definitely facing some, you know, some disciplinary action from the league itself, and the reason I said no in the past is because it came out after his freshman year that him and his dad agreed no matter what, you know, he'd stay 4 years, get his degree, because football doesn't last forever for some guys. But I think Jameis is definitely a talented young man. He has the potential to be an NFL quarterback, unlike Johnny Manziel, in my opinion.
And Mariota are two intriguing options for teams that need quarterback. And Winston could fall to Arizona Cardinals if they want to move in the future. You said you didn't like that fit, but I don't know, something about that keeps ringing a bell in my head after this year, Palmer.
Okay, so the final fact or fiction statement, and this will also wrap up our show this week, is, drumroll. No drumroll.
You can't hear it. I'm not in a good drum.
Michigan will upset Michigan State.
Can I laugh? Can I just laugh for 45 seconds? I am a Spartan fan. No, I can talk for 45 seconds. I'm just messing around. I'm a Spartan fan, so you can call me biased or whatever, but come on, man. I mean, I just don't see the Michigan coming close. Devin Gardner pretty much got assaulted on the field last year. And I think rivalry games really do bring out like a little more intensity in guys, and I really think you can see that on a football field especially. And I think MSU is ready for this game. I know MSU looked a little bit shaky at points against Purdue, and I'm blanking on who they played last week, but I watched the game. But they've looked shaky against those teams at times, but they ended up coming back and winning in a convincing fashion. So I like MSU to have a similar result this year. Yeah.
Okay. When I was younger, I do come from a Michigan Wolverine household, and you know, I grew up a Michigan Wolverines fan, but I'm really kind of changing my mindset on this. I mean, I'm not a Spartan fan by any means. I don't just flip-flop sides all of a sudden, but you know, I really don't love Michigan, and I don't despise the Spartans, but I will be cheering for the Maize and Blue this Saturday. And but I don't think they're going to get it done. They're a laughing stock of a team. Michigan State is a national title contender.
Yeah, they beat Indiana last week. They had a shaky start, and they beat Indiana.
Yeah.
You got a pleasure town, so I was bugging me because I didn't get it.
They're a national title contender this year. Great defense. The offense gets it done every week, in and out. So.
Yeah, even when they look shaky, they come back and win.
So, okay.
I like it. I like Michigan State. Go green, go white tomorrow for sure. And I think that this is just going to be – I think they're going to make the college playoff. I believe in them. I've been watching them. And I think that they're
going to
do really good.
All right, so that wraps up Fact or Fiction, and we're getting towards the hour mark. That also wraps up our podcast for this week. We hope you enjoyed it. We definitely appreciate the listens we've been getting. Not a ton, but we have been getting some listens on Podomatic. We post the link on our Twitter account every week. If you don't follow us on Twitter, get on that at NSF Sports Report. We follow back. Hector Santiago.
He's a Major League Baseball pitcher.
We're approved.
There's no excuse not to follow us if you're anything less than Major League Baseball pitcher.
Yes. And also, like I said, we follow back. We'd love to interact with our followers. So if you have any questions, comments, opinions on the show, suggestions, we'll take those too. Tweet us at NSF Sports Report or email us at nsfsportsreporters@gmail.com. The website's up. We've been awfully busy. We haven't been writing a ton of articles for it, but there are a few up there. Still trying to get the layout, you know, for the website figured out. Haven't used WordPress in a while, but the thing for that is nsfsportsreporters.wordpress.com.
Thanks for listening.